order. It is 1:34 on the afternoon of Monday, February 23rd. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Terrio is here, Senator Walikowski, Senator Elton, and myself, Senator French. We have one bill on the calendar today, CS for Senate Bill number 85. And to present the bill, it's a governor's bill, and to present the bill, I believe, is Ms. Carpinetti. Please come forward. Nice to see you. Welcome to the committee. Put yourself on the record, and we'll just march through the bill, and if anyone has questions, they can raise their hands and tackle them, and then we get to the finished line. We'll go back and ask some more.
Okay.
Great.
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. The governor introduced SB 85, and I think it might be helpful to give you a little history. I'm going to try and keep this as short as possible. Our local option laws were adopted in the 1980s. Certain amounts at that time were set for various purposes of the local option law. One purpose was to set an amount, the possession of a larger amount of which would be presumed, just a presumption of possession for sale if a person were prosecuted for bootlegging.
Can I ask a question? Before those local option laws went into effect, was the entire state essentially wet? It was you know, from Ketchikan to Barrow, all one set of alcohol laws?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct.
Okay.
I think that's correct. I will double check.
Just a curiosity. I mean, when you mentioned local option.
That's my understanding, but sure. I could be mistaken.
Okay.
The amounts have been essentially the same. There's been some tweaking of them over the years, but they are set now at 10.5 liters of hard alcohol, 24 liters of wine, and 12 gallons of malt liquor. And these aren't limits on possession. What they are is if a person is found to be in possession of more than these amounts and there is other evidence available, that would be an evidentiary presumption that possession was for sale. That's certainly rebuttable, but it doesn't mean that if you possess more, you're going to be convicted of, or prosecuted for bootlegging.
So I actually think that's important to stop for a moment because it seemed like the discussion in the last committee sort of focused like a laser beam on those numbers, and you can get sort of overemphasized.
Yes.
You can overemphasize those numbers as sort of some kind of barrier.
It isn't a barrier. It's just the amount that they said in the 1980s that in terms of a prosecution, if you are prosecuting somebody for bootlegging, and we have police here who can explain it certainly better than I can, that you can use that as an evidentiary presumption that possession was for purposes of sale.
Sure.
So if
you find a person that has a wine cellar, for example, and they've got 200 or 300 bottles of wine, that's probably not a bootlegging operation. That's probably their wine cellar that they like to go down and get a bottle of wine out of.
That's correct.
On the other hand, if you find a guy who's got 10 or 15 cases of whiskey and, you know, it's boxed up and it's got duct tape around it and it looks like it's ready to go somewhere, that's something else entirely.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And we actually have some pictures of that. I'll have to find them and bring them to you. What an amount of bootleg, you know, what some of the amounts that our bootleggers have.
Sure.
And these amounts are used for various other things in our statutes. For example, if a person is convicted of bootlegging, and they're convicted of bootlegging, for example, more than 10.5 liters of hard alcohol, that would be the threshold amount between a felony and a misdemeanor prosecution for bootlegging.
So if you sell 5 gallons of whiskey, that's a misdemeanor. If you sell 11 gallons, it's a felony.
If you sell five times, we were talking about liters now.
So. Liters.
So
yep.
If you sell 12 liters of hard liquor, that would be a felony prosecution. Bootlegging. But that would be, you'd be convicted of bootlegging. That's really different from possessing or for personal use. Over the years, people have come to the conclusion that these amounts are too high. And that was one of the considerations that the Rural Justice Commission had, and I think there'll be a witness from that commission who will testify today. Last year in a House Finance Committee meeting, the representative from Bethel raised her concern that these amounts were too high and we should be seriously considering lowering them. And there was consensus, and that was the discussion of the crime bill last year that included several of the alcohol provisions. I'm sure you remember that bill. And there was similar discussion in the House Judiciary Committee that these amounts were, this is a lot of alcohol that we probably should consider reducing them. So the governor, in response to those these considerations, introduced SB 85. And it's in its first iteration, it was different from the CS that's before you today. The first CS directly addressed those amounts and reduced them. We had some concern by people who live in rural areas who like to go to Costco, like all of us do, and buy in bulk for a long period of time. And so in response to that reaction, this bill, the CS, doesn't address the amounts that we were talking about before, that give rise to the presumption of sale if you possess them, or are the threshold between felony and misdemeanor. This just addresses the time. And what it does is, right now, a package store in Anchorage can sell to a local option community, to an individual in a local option community, every single month, 10.5 liters of hard liquor, 24 liters of wine, and 12 gallons of malt liquor. This bill at this point provides that those amounts can be sent by a package store to a person living in a damp local option community every 2 months rather than every month. And this seems to answer the concern that, perfectly law-abiding people like to buy alcohol and save on freight charges. The bill does a couple of other things, that's new in our law, and that would adopt civil penalties for licensees whose employees or agents are convicted of furnishing alcohol to a minor while on that licensee's premises. Most of our liquor licensees in our state are highly responsible, and they emphasize to their employees and agents that they should not be furnishing alcohol to minors, and they emphasize carding minors. We have some that are not as serious about that, and this would provide consequences for those owners, licensees whose employees are convicted of furnishing to minors. The first one would be a letter of warning from the ABC board explaining what the consequences were for additional convictions for people on their premises. And the second and subsequent would be a $1,000 civil penalty on the owner of the licensee of a it would really apply to bars and package stores whose employee was convicted of furnishing alcohol to minors while on their premises. The bill does two other things, and those are in response to bills that were passed last year that were not completely correct. One of them is minor consuming that was last year in 2001 the legislature adopted a scheme that any minor convicted of minor consuming would be on probation till their 21st birthday. The legislature last year decided that was too long and changed it to a one-year period of probation. And in the process, it was drafted in a way that some judges have interpreted them as not allowing. The minor consuming law has a three-step process. You've got your first, you've got your repeat, and you've got your habitual. And some magistrates, I think, were concerned that the law wasn't specific enough to allow you to go from step one to step two to step three. This bill corrects that problem.
And which section is that?
3 and 4 of the bill. And this version was drafted by Jerry Luckup from Legislative Affairs in response to the concern, because the concern was raised soon after the bill passed. We hope clarifies that step one is the first, step two is the second, and the consequences for repeat apply to anybody who has a conviction for their first offense, and the consequences for habitual apply to all minors who have had two incidents of minor consuming in their lives. And the second
So section three is
section
for
three and four is
section three is for the repeater, and section four is for the habitual.
Yes,
looks like it.
It clarifies it. It really doesn't change anything. And when I read it in the first place, I remember thinking that these magistrates are really, really precise. But they are correct, and this fixes it. The second fix was. Last year, the legislature adopted mandatory minimum sentences for people convicted of bootlegging that everybody intended, and I think the legislature intended, to be the same as the mandatory minimum penalties for drunk drivers. Unfortunately, there's a different definition for previous conviction in our drunk driving law than there is in our bootlegging law, which made it inconsistent. So for felony bootlegging. So this corrects that mistake also.
And that's section 5?
That's section 5.
So it's cleanup.
Yes. It's 3, 4, and 5 are cleanup. And the two main new provisions in this bill are the change in the so that in response to written orders, a licensee cannot send more than the amounts that are currently in law in a 2-month period rather than in a 1-month period, and the civil penalties for licensees.
Very good. That's an overview of the bill. Thank you, Ms. Carpenetti. Questions for Ms. Carpenetti? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm still struggling with the amounts here, so I'm going back up to section 1. And first, a question that probably has an obvious answer, but it talks about requiring a package store liquor licensee that they can't send more than 10.5 liters of distilled spirits, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm assuming that somebody who wants to buy 10.5 liters of distilled spirits, are they prohibited from going to a second licensee and a third licensee to get a second and a third shipment?
Yes, through the chair, the legislature a couple years ago adopted a database system for so that people who licensees who send alcohol to local option communities in response to a written order has to check a database and make sure that these that this individual hasn't gone shopping in various
Because I assume that people always are people who want to do bad are always looking for new ways to do bad and staying ahead of the law. I mean, what happens when you squeeze the balloon in this manner? I mean, is it going to encourage a household that might have 4 adults in it? I mean, we're now talking about 42 liters of distilled spirits that could be shipped to that household with 4 adults. And it just seems to me that when we're solving this problem, what we may be encouraging is we may be encouraging other people to get in on the illegal profits that accrued because of bootlegging, that what we might end up with is just people selling the opportunity for them to get liquor by buying liquor and then giving it to somebody else that would then.
Through the chair, I don't think there is a magic solution to bootlegging. And so that over the years, we have worked on different solutions. The database, I think, was a really helpful one. Right now, under current law, 2 adults in a family can order these amounts. Each of them can order these amounts now, and this doesn't change that. They could still do it if it's every 2 months. 4 adults in a family could order 4 times. This is not going to change that.
Yeah, I guess I'm struggling with the amount here. I mean, I'm not sure I'd want to be a neighbor of somebody that consumes that much liquor in 2 months. It's just staggering to me. And the only reason I could think of for ordering that much would be to sell it or give some of it away. I mean, that's a lot of booze. I'm just
well through
stunned.
The chair. Right now, every individual in a damn community can order that amount every month.
Right.
So this addresses
it's twice as good, but I'm still staggered. Thank you.
Further questions from Ms. Carpenetti? If you'd stand by, please. We have many people signed up to testify, and so let's turn now to that portion of the hearing. We have Mr. Just so the committee knows, we have Major Glick on the line and Leon Boyia. I hope I didn't do violence to your name, Mr. Boyia, to answer questions. The latter is from Barrow, and it will probably become clear through the discussion why Barrow is noteworthy on this topic. But let's go ahead and go to public testimony. We've got probably 8 or 9 people signed up, so I guess I'd ask you each to try to combine your comments to 3 to 5 minutes and perhaps closer to 3. But let's go ahead and get started. Michelle DeWitt, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
We can hear you. Thanks, Ms. DeWitt. If you just go ahead and state your name for the record, tell us who you're affiliated with, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, my name is Michelle DeWitt, last name D-E-W-I-T-T, and I'm the director of Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, which is the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Shelter and Outreach Program.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
So I just wanted to state for the record today that I have reviewed the CS version of this bill, and I wanted to express my appreciation to the state for looking at ways to address the issue around alcohol in rural Alaska. And I wanted to let all of you know that from my perspective, serving victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, alcohol is often a major factor. It's not cause-effect, but we certainly do see increase in injuries and in violence when alcohol is introduced to a domestic violence situation. And so I know that there are a lot of varying opinions on this bill. I've discussed it with several of my board and several community leaders here in town, and I know you're going to hear different perspectives. But I really wanted to make sure that folks knew that from our perspective, substance abuse and the use of alcohol is a major factor in crime, and how appreciative we are of the state looking at efforts to make a difference in that regard.
Ms. DeWitt, thank you. Any questions for Ms. DeWitt while we have her on the phone? I don't see any. Again, thanks for coming out to testify today.
Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Thank you.
Senator Terrio may have a question
for
you.
Not a question. I did have your staff just pass out a little sheet of information that my office had put together a number of years ago when we had legislation that dealt with the importation rules in this on the state statutes that breaks the liter bottles of wine and malt into 8-ounce cups, servings, certainly whiskey. You know, I think of a shot of whiskey on the rocks or a shot of whiskey mixed in into a whiskey-based drink might not be a 12-ounce can. We're used to a 12-ounce can of beer, but as Senator Elton just indicated, it's a substantial amount of alcohol. And when you break it all down into cups, you know, that's per day, it's over, you know, it's over 11 cups of alcohol a day. So to me, it's a staggering amount. But mind you, I don't drink much at all, so. But when you're dealing with liters and gallons, and it's hard to equate what's that mean on a daily basis. It seems to me it's more than enough. So having it be every 2 months knocks it down to a little bit more reasonable level, if you ask me.
Senator, actually, thank you for this. We may refine this just a little bit more, and the only reason I say that is because I don't know if it's helpful to think about mixing beer, wine and whiskey into a cup and drinking out of it. It's just not the way most of us drink, but it is helpful, I think, to give it some measure, and that's certainly an eye-popping measure. So thanks for the work on that, and we may refine it a little bit more. Next up on the list is Jody Maloff. Can you hear me, Jody?
Yes, I can hear you, and it's J-O-D-Y-M-A-L. U.S. as in Sam, and it's pronounced Malou. It's French.
Malou. I beg your pardon. Nice to have you with us.
Bethel.
Please go ahead and give us your testimony.
I live in Bethel. My husband is a teacher at Bethel Regional High School, and he's been a teacher for over 40 years. Believe me, from the stories that I've been told and from my own personal experiences among my friends here in Bethel, I am well aware of what alcohol can do to a family, to a house, to a community. However, SB 85 treats all people who reside in local option communities like second-class citizens. Imagine this. You order the amount of liquor allowed by SB 85, have people over to your house for a game, have a little beer or wine left over. You forget about it, and you order again the next month, which then puts you over the allowable limit according to SB 85. We want to be treated like the rest of the people in Alaska. SB 85 combines ridiculous liquor limitations with punishments for furnishing alcoholic beverages to minors under 21. Why would the attorneys tasked with writing this bill include protection for minors, which we all want, to be combined with these required punishments for innocent law-abiding citizens, so that it forces legislators to think they must pass it in order to look like they have family values, like they want to protect our children? I would like to know why our former representative has requested this legislation from the governor, and why is it being fast-tracked at the request of the governor? There is an agenda here. SB 85 stinks like rotting fish. And that's all I have to say.
Ms. Malou, thanks for coming out. And I can assure you that this bill is going to get thoroughly considered on its way through the system. Next up is Dave Trantham. Mr. Trantham, can you hear me?
Good evening. This is Dave Trantham. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we sure can. Mr. Trantham, go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead and present us with your testimony.
My name is Dave Trantham, T-R-A-N-T-H-A-M. I testify on behalf of myself and my family. And we're having difficulty hearing you on this speakerphone.
Okay.
So if everybody could speak into the mic, we could hear better.
That's good advice. Thank you for reminding me about that. I'll try to get folks to lean into their mics. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you very much for that. Senate Bill 85 will not serve its intended purpose. Bootlegging goes on in Battle. I just read in the Anchorage paper, bootlegging is going on in Anchorage, a damp community where there's many bars and many liquor stores. There are unintended consequences of Senate Bill 85. Going back several years, we the people of Bethel, and I am a longtime resident of Bethel and longer resident of the communities in Western Alaska. I think I can speak from experience. Bootlegging has always been here, always will be here. If the limits were zero, we'd still have bootlegging. Liquor, wine, and beer is here to stay forever. Senate 8, and going back to the local option, just briefly, we voted because we felt the local option was the best option. Since that time, it's been tweaked and tweaked and squeaked and tweaked. Over and over and over again. It was our understanding in the beginning, local option means the local people have some say. We have no more say. The name should be changed to legislative and former representatives' options or the governor's options. We have no control. The legislature is controlling everything. I view this community will have a petition on the street within a week to opt out of the local option. I just reviewed the council package. Tomorrow night they meet. There's a resolution in opposition to Senate Bill 85 to be discussed tomorrow night at the council meeting. It was presented by our mayor. I wish I knew the answers. Education. And it has been said in Bethel, it's time to teach people how to drink and how to stop binge drinking. Binge drinking. People get a bottle of bootleg whiskey. They take the cap off. 2 minutes later, that bottle is empty. People with problems. And their problems lead to community problems. One of the big drivers of our economy in Bethel is liquor, health care, and government drives the economy in Bethel. It's been that way for a long time. If there were no booze in Bethel, 600-700, maybe as many as 800 jobs would dry up instantly. But that liquor ain't going to go away, in my opinion. This is not the answer. I do not know what the answer is, but I think there will be a response. And that response will be opting out of the local option. And maybe that would be unfortunate. I believe Ms. Carpinella Netty testified to that effect last Tuesday. I will close my remarks. Senate Bill 85 will not serve the people of Bethel, in my opinion. And this community, I do believe, will be opting out of the local option very, very soon, so we can be first-class citizens again. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time.
Questions for Mr. Trantham? I don't see any, sir. Thank you for coming out and testifying. Next up is Thomas Hawkins. Mr. Hawkins, are you on the line?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go ahead and state your name for the record. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Thomas Hawkins, H-A-W-K-I-N-S. I'm a citizen of Bethel. My comment about the Senate bill is that we voted back in the 70s for local option. We never voted for limits on that. We actually voted several times for the local option to remain damp in our community. We seem to like that status. We've never voted for limits. The limits have come from the legislature. There's been two or three attempts in the past to change or modify the limits. It all comes from Juneau, or comes from the local area where we have a local option. I think it's Juneau is attempting to override our local option with what they think we should do. We as a community voted our local option, and I like to keep it local. Thank you.
Mr. Hawkins, thank you. I have one question for you from Senator Elton.
Less a question, Mr. Hawkins, than just a comment. I represent Juneau, and just would like to point out that the changes are made by people who come from across the state. Juneau has nothing to do with it other than my single vote in the legislature, and just wanted to kind of clarify that. That it isn't a community that is doing this to you. It is a group of legislators who operate in a democratic manner by majority vote.
That I understand, that it's not Juneau. Really, didn't mean to single out Juneau, but I did mean to single out the legislature because they are from everywhere around the state. We actually have just two people there that represent us. And again, we voted here in our community as a local option. We would like to continue to be able to vote a local opinion issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Next up is Kevin Carter. Mr. Carter, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Kevin Carter, K-E-V-I-N-C-A-R-T-E-R. I'd just like to reiterate what Mr. Hawkins and Mr. Trantham said. We really appreciate the House and Senate worried about our well-being. But as I look at this House full of grown men, we'd kind of like to be able to decide on our own how much beer, whiskey, and wine we bring out here. We know you have our best interests in mind, but it just depressing to know that we're being told by people that don't live in the bush and don't know how things work out here, what we can and can't do, and how much of it we can do. I don't know if the gentleman earlier commented on the amount of alcohol as it stands now and as it would stand with the 2 months. If you've ever been to moose camp or duck camp with four or five grown men that weigh 200 pounds each, a couple cases of beer, that's not a lot, especially on a two-week hunt. And that's just an example. This is not going to solve the problem out here. Bootleggers will find a way. And something to think about, people who don't have good jobs or any jobs at all that continue to drink and they do it through bootlegging, what now is, I've heard, somewhere around $90 to $100 a bottle. If this goes through, it'll be $250 a bottle. And that'll just take from the children of the people who drink irresponsibly, because they'll spend all their money on a $250 bottle of booze, because they're going to buy it, and the bootleggers are going to have it to sell. This isn't going to solve anything, and I've talked to a lot of people in this community. If it goes through with the change in limitations, even with the revision to the 2 month, change, this community is not going to stand for it. They're going to band together. We're going to have just legal action and vote out a local option. That's what everybody's going to want to do. The database is unconstitutional as it is. We swallowed that, but this one we're not going to swallow. So that's all I have to say.
Mr. Carter, thanks for coming out. And all of the comments so far have at least prompted me to look something I'll look into between now and the next hearing was what the last vote was in Bethel. How close was it? You know, we've heard many witnesses say that this will prompt an opting out for local option in Bethel, and it's something I'm going to look into before the next hearing, is to see just how close those votes were in the past. So thank you. Next up is Gary, and I'm just going to do the best I can. Vinasfi.
If you could, one second real quick on your comments about what you wanted to look into. There is a councilman present who recalls, what was that?
85%
of?
I'm sorry, whoever it is that's speaking, we've got to get you on the record so that we have good records and we know in the future who it was that said what. So I don't mean to interrupt. We've got a procedure we've got to follow.
Okay. My name is Eric Middlebrook.
Mr. Middlebrook, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and testify.
Okay. The vote that he was inquiring about, the most recent one was a vote to pass an ordinance within the city of Bethel that would allow only the citizens of Bethel to vote on whether or not we had a delivery site, and to say that the city of Bethel City Council did not have the authority to establish a centralized delivery site for alcohol. The citizens of Bethel voted 85% in favor of that. They voted 85% in favor of maintaining the control in the voters' hands on that issue. That was the last vote that we had concerning alcohol. I do know that almost every single local option vote that we have had has been turned down 2-1, either to go wet or to go dry. Citizens of Bethel are very adamant about wanting to keep things status quo. And it's obvious now that with the proposal of this bill, it's been a wake-up call to us that if the state so chooses, they could go all the way to completely dry, virtually dry, with a limit of 3 liters. We've had a history of more restrictive limits on alcohol. When it was first voted, there was no limits. Then there was a limit put in. And each step, we were told, this will help fix the problem. Then there was a database established, and we were told that that would fix the problem. And now we're having drastic limits on these, and we have been pushed and pushed, and we just feel that we've been backed into a corner, and we have no other options here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Middlebrook. We did skip over Mr. Vinasfi. Mr. Vinasfi, if you're there.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead and testify.
Gary Vanas, last name V as in Victor, A-N-A-S-S-E. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for your service to the citizens of Alaska. I oppose Senate Bill 85, and I'll give you some of the reasons why. We have voted to have a damp status on several occasions. I've been in Bethel more than 24 years now, and on many occasions we voted on local option status. The result of that vote every single time has been to retain a damp status. It's been damp as long as I've been around. I think 1976 went from wet to damp. Many occasions we have voted on that, and we've elected to retain that damp status. I feel strongly that that is the way that this community should be. This could lead to a local option election that would create a wet status that I do not want, and I believe the community as a whole, at least the voting community, does not want also. But certainly this could agitate people enough, those that have always felt maybe we should be wet, that they might forward a petition to go wet, which could pass. I don't think that would be a good thing for us. This could also increase the manufacture of homebrew and increase of drug use. We've already seen huge increases in both of those, both the manufacture of homebrew. They have what's called a 16-hour raisin brew. People are getting very adept at manufacturing a rather nasty-tasting alcoholic beverage, and that's certainly been increased. We've also seen a huge increase in drug use, and I think we're gonna see a continued increase in that drug use, particularly when they start manufacturing meth out here, which not really doing yet. There's a small amount of meth at this time, but no real manufacturing of it. But when that hits, which this could lead to that, we could have a lot of problems. I feel that money and effort should go into undercover operations and reward money. We've had a few undercover operations in the past that have been, and so have other areas of rural Alaska, particularly Barrow and Kotzebue, that have had tremendous success in rounding up illegal citizens and illegal activities, bootlegging, drug dealing, things like that. And we haven't seen that here in Bethel in quite some time. I think that would be a good thing to do. While we appreciate the governor and the legislature's concerns about the problems and issues we have with alcohol in our region, we feel that the former limits did not accomplish anything. And those limits have been in place since the late 80s, 1988. Senator John Binkley was the one that got that started in the legislature. The new ones will not accomplish any of the desired effects also. We do have problems and issues with alcohol in this region. I don't think anybody can deny that. Much of this problem is village-based, which is you know, we're sort of connected to that just by our geographical location. But again, we're talking about a law that's applicable to Bethel, Kotzebue, and Barrow. We're not talking about villages, but let's treat the disease, not the symptom. Please reject this bill and allow the citizens of Bethel and our legislatures to come up with solutions. I've participated in numerous local option elections. We've always retained a damn status. The people that are willing to break the laws, and become bootleggers or drug dealers or things like that, they'll find other ways to do it. There's multiple ways to get alcohol into this community, including you having your friends, your family, your neighbors, and even non-drinkers to order for them. That's currently happening, and will continue to do so. Price of that bootleg jug, as we call it, will go up dramatically. So a bootlegger profit margin will go way up. So they will be more motivated to get that product in here through private aircraft or a number of ways. The other thing I want you to do is don't overanalyze this quantity. The citizens of Bethel here would just like to see this whole quantity thing go away and let us all make our own decisions on how much we order. And a couple of examples of that are, if you, like, holiday time, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas time, there's a numerous sales that go on in the alcohol industry. I know I grew up in the alcohol industry. My mother's still in the alcohol business. And get a lot of sales and products that are a lot cheaper that time of year than any other time. And of course, I've always said, you know, good whiskey is good fresh, but it has a long shelf life, too. So people may be inclined to buy what seems like a lot, but it might be a whole year's worth. The other thing that has been overlooked completely in the past is the current quantity of beer is 12 gallons. Which does not allow a person to get a keg. Well, as you may know or realize or understand, keg, for example, would not be bootlegged. It would be very difficult to bootleg a keg, but a keg would be used for a wedding or a special event, a college graduation, a 50th birthday party, or something like that. The current law doesn't even allow those. So you have to be careful when you're analyzing these quantities, because I've heard it said that, you know, you can get 10.5 liters. That seems like a tremendous amount, way more than you need. I would agree. For personal consumption, I would agree. But you're making decisions that have a greater impact than personal drinking or personal consumption.
If I could get you to conclude your testimony, please.
That's about it. If you have any questions, I thank you for listening.
Thanks so much. Questions for Mr. Banas? I don't see any. Thanks again for coming out. Next, let's go to Thor Williams, who should be on the line. Mr. Williams, are you there?
Yes, Senator, I'm here.
Go ahead and put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name is Thor Williams. First name is T-H-O-R. Last name is Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S. I'm here to thank the committee and the chair for doing the business of the state on a daily basis. I know it can be long and grueling. One of the issues that I'm bringing up concerning Senate Bill 85 is, has been brought up earlier in this testimony, is that we have seen a rise of community members ordering alcohol now that we have a electronic delivery site within our community. Basically, that means that we have people that have never ordered alcohol ordering alcohol now for their family members or for whatever reasons they have to order alcohol. Please remember, as a committee, that the people in Bethel pay freight costs twice. Once we order that in Anchorage through the freight processing to bring it into our state, and then paying the freight price back out to Bethel. That's a huge cost. One of the issues is well, freight is cheaper if you you buy in bulk, and that cost is a savings to the consumer. Another thing the committee needs to realize as this community of Bethel is there would be a potential loss of revenue to our community because we gain fees from the alcohol that is purchased in Anchorage. And that has gone through and proven to be a way that we provide services within our community. With the limited amount of alcohol that can be delivered to a resident, that's going to be a tax cut to our community and revenue decrease, to our community that could cause loss of employment for some of our city employees. Opting out of local option has been discussed in this teleconference and is a real issue coming up, and probably would have the reverse of what the generator of this bill has brought forward to this committee, the opposite effect, I have asked that the ABC board to speak to the City Council on March 10th about what it means to go and opt out of local option, that so our community understands what is the next step. Because opting out of local option can cause more problems than it is worth. I think our community just wants to be left alone and not have Big Brother look over our shoulder. I have the same question about the communities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Would you like to have somebody to tell you how you're supposed to live your life, how much alcohol you're supposed to drink or not drink in a month? That is unfair. Yes, we have problems. Anchorage has problems. Fairbanks has problems. Juneau has problems with alcohol and drugs, too. I don't think this is a solution to this problem. I'd ask that this Judiciary Committee break up Senate Bill 85 to address the different problems within this bill so that they can be addressed in an individual basis. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Williams, thank you. Next up is Ole Olson. Mr. Olson, are you on the line?
Yes.
If you can go ahead and state your name for the record, maybe get a little closer to that microphone, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, my name is Ole Olson, O-L-S-O-N. I'm a 30-year resident of Bethel. And I won't rehash what all of the people in opposition to this bill have said, but I certainly agree with them. I just want to be treated like any other citizen in the state of Alaska. and not have somebody decide what's best for me. I don't think this bill is going to do anything for the bootlegging other than make it more expensive. And I won't. I thank you for your effort and time, and I'll close.
Mr. Olson, thank you for your testimony. Next up is Wilson Justin. Mr. Justin, can you hear me?
I am here.
Go ahead and state your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Wilson Justin. I am calling from Chistochina, Alaska. I work for Mount Sanford Tribal Consortium. I am their Vice President of Health. And I also serve on a number of state commissions and committees, one of them being the Alaska Rural Justice and Law Enforcement Commission. And I am in favor of Senate Bill 85. I support the bill, and I am my remarks will be mostly aimed at the first part of the bill, since the other part of the bill that has to do with Section 2 and Section 3, I won't have the background context as it relates to the other legislative language that those are related to. So Section 1, I support unilaterally. I've spent a lot of years dealing with alcohol and substance abuse issues in practically every forum you can think of, including prisons, including the legal arena, including courts, and now with health. There is no questioning the fact that in the health arena, which is around a $1 billion industry in Alaska, between two-thirds and three-quarters of the costs associated with delivering health of any kind is directly related to alcohol and substance abuse. That may astonish people, but it's a given in the health industry. And I won't talk to the costs associated with prisons or to the legal arena or to the court or to the domestic violence arena. There are as many facts and statistics as you want to come up with in those arenas. I'll just simply keep my remarks to the health arena. I want to say thank you, and I want to restate that I am in support of Senate Bill 85.
Mr. Justin, thanks for coming out. Thanks for your contributions to the state, and we appreciate hearing your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up is Cesare Nazinski. Mr. Nazinski, I did the best I could with your name. If you can hear me.
Yes, are you talking to me?
Yes, I believe I am. Go ahead and
yes.
State your name for the record.
My name is.
Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Cesare Marcinski. I'm calling from Bethel, Alaska. I live in Bethel for 28 years and running small business for 25 years. I'm married with Native lady for 20 years, have three children who grow up and they're in college right now. I strongly oppose that SB 85. I came from outside, I came from other country, and, you know, this is not only about alcohol. This bill reminds me, my grandpa telling me, when there been World War II and people been marked, be Jew, and have stolen his coat. And this thing remind me black guy with the, can sit with the same bus with the 20s, 30s, and 50s. That sound like we can't vote and we can't decide on ourselves. There was people from all over the place, not from Bethel, telling us you have to do what we decide for you. That is like I have feel like getting the rights away from us, and let us deal with these problems. Let us decide. We need it or not, needed those Bill 85. Can we order so much amount alcohol or so much amount beef or fat? Maybe fat is no good too. People, young people turning to the gasoline, sniffing to easy hairspray and all bunch of drugs what they're getting because the alcohol is hard to get it, more hard to get it. And I really strongly support strong punishment for bootlegging. This is even not getting to the head. is man caught with bootlegging, make it income hundreds, thousands of dollars a year, and he have probation or a couple of weeks in prison. I'd like to see those punishments being really strong and powerful to stop from bootlegging. But I'd like to see free choose. This is what I like to do. This is what like having. I don't bother anybody. No, I just let me decide what I'm going to eat today, what I'm going to drink, and how much I'm going to drink. I don't cause any problems. My kids don't cause any problems. And I came to this country to enjoy the freedom, and I like see that. I'd be really appreciated. I really appreciate it to care for us and helping us decide what we do. But I like have the freedom of choose. That's all what I say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, and thanks for coming out to testify. Let's switch now to Fairbanks, where we have one person signed up to testify there, Larry Hackenmiller. Mr. Hackenmiller, are you on the line?
Yes, this is Larry Hackenmiller, Hackenmiller. I'm here to testify against the bill, and both sections A and, or the first part and three, which is the civil penalties of $1,000 as a consequence for owners. We'll start with that one. Basically, what this does is saying that because an employee, after all the training that we have to give them required by state law and the other policies that we have inside a licensed premises, that we are going to be fined $1,000 without due process for the second conviction of a bartender. It's they are the ones that, even with our training that we have, they make a mistake, and yet we are now held accountable. The ABC board does have statute, Title IV statutes that do cover this and gives the ABC board the autonomy to make those decisions with regards to penalties. This is uncalled for with regards to giving me a $1,000 fine. This gets into a felony range type situation, yet I don't have a day in court. When is this possible? Normally in a misdemeanor situation after $300, and for instance in the borough, you know, you have to go to court after that. I mean, they can only pass a law to charge you so much, but this $1,000 fine is ludicrous, and it's unreasonable, it's unjust, without due process. This needs to be taken out altogether. Okay, with regards to the bootlegging, this is supposed to be a standard for bootlegging. This is not to solve the social problems of alcohol. Yet I keep hearing testimony from the Juno side that basically says, well, we've got all these problems with alcohol and this would help the situation. We have dry villages that have a problem. They don't have it. What limits they have is zero there, and we don't solve the problem. Here's a Bush community, Bethel, basically saying, let us handle our own problem. Beryl has her own local option with regards to how many liters. And don't forget, when it comes to bootlegging, and I disagree with the Department of Law, Ms. Carbonetti basically saying, well, it's rebuttal. It's rebuttable. Well, basically, if you come in and you discover over 10 and a half liters of whiskey, that's the bootlegging level. And whether it be misdemeanor or felony, wait a minute, I just happen to have some left over. The reason why you see that half gallon there is because we put that in there because we were worried about having someone in a household having a liter in there and orders 10 more, and then someone shows up and sees 11. That makes them a bootlegger by your legal standard. We don't need that. You're going to make criminals out of people that are not involved in a criminal activity. And again, if we need to stay on point. Okay, this is a bootlegging bill. It's not a bill on social problems. You can't analyze the quantities. Well, if we send so much per month, this is how much you're going to drink every day. That's not happening. You can't apply that to any other village or any other town, city, urban, or rural. Okay, that's not the way it works. We increase our population in the summertime, almost double it, triple it, and there's a lot more alcohol being sold to the tourist. And you put that per capita amount on everybody, doesn't make sense. So let's get back online here with regards to what this bill does. If you have corrective language for the juveniles' consumption, that's covered by a different bill. This bill could just sit where it's at, and you could still accomplish what you want to with regard to the juveniles. But as far as the $1,000 penalty for a license holder, where's my due process? Don't I get a chance in court? I am guilty until proven innocent. It's the same thing with the bootleggers. when you find 12 bottles of liters in my house, I am guilty. I have to prove my innocence. That's my rebuttal, but I still have to do that. And if it's a criminal crime, it should be criminal. But a civil penalty of $1,000, way too out of line, and I'm not given a chance to defend myself. Thank you.
Mr. Hackenmiller, thank you. I'll just make an observation that I would take pity on the trooper and the DA who tried to bring a slightly over-the-limit case of bootlegging against a Bethel resident, because it seems to me that the citizens out there would look at that with a jaundiced eye. But that's something we'll get to later.
I agree, but it's not an option. The law is the law, and if they don't follow the law and enforce the law, therein lies the problems. We don't need the law.
Thank you, sir. While we were working on this, I took a few moments of arithmetic with Senator Terrio's numbers, and I think it's worth at least putting on the record that my calculations are that the numbers he gave us were both combined for all alcohol sources and for a single month, whereas the bill calls for a two-month limit. It works out by my math, and I'm happy to stand corrected, that you can ship 6 ounces of whiskey per day to a citizen. You can ship 13 ounces of wine per day to a citizen. This is based on a two-month total. And ship 25 ounces of beer per day to a citizen. We can debate later on what the appropriate level is, but I think that's the arithmetic as far as the restrictions on shipment. That completes the teleconference portion of the testimony. We do have two people here in the room who'd like to testify. First is Mr. Darwin Bewer. Mr. Bewer, nice to see you here. Welcome to Juneau from Anchorage.
Thank you.
Please, you know the drill. Put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name is Darwin Bewer. I'm chairman of the board of directors for Statewide Char, Cabaret Hotel Restaurant and Retailers Association, representing the liquor licensees around the state. We're opposed to Part 2, Section 2 of the SB 85. This is the one that was just talked about by Mr. Hackenmiller that gives a $1,000 fine for a licensee for an action of an employee. This is not right. Say there was a delivery driver who ran a red light. Should the owner of the company be fined for a mistake, an obvious, well, maybe it was obvious or not obvious, but in the case of a licensee, there's no licensees out there that are legitimate bar owners that are trying to sell to minors. We don't agree with that at all, of course. We actually have, in Anchorage, we have our own Anchorage Char has put together a compliance check that we fund for ourselves. We are putting together one in Kodiak as a pilot program out there as our own compliance checks with in-house, which, of course, you already know that the state of Alaska does their own compliance checks by the state troopers. But we are doing our own to try to keep our numbers down and keep the people informed. All of our servers, including our owners, are required to have TAM courses, the Techniques of Alcohol Management. We have to renew those every 3 years. So in my personal case, I own Darwin's Theory in Anchorage, which I've been there coming up on 28 years. So that would mean I've been through 9 TAM courses in my lifetime, and I've got a bartender that's been with me 25 years, another one 23 years, another one 15 years. They know the laws. They know the laws. If they make a mistake, which can happen, I mean, we all make mistakes, then it goes on to the owner of the bar, and it should be the perpetrator that comes into the bar, which there are laws, the underage people that try to get into the bar, they're the ones that should be, the ones that pay the penalties. It shouldn't be the owner of the establishment. We work very hard at that. I know where this is coming from. This legislation came from social services and other welfare organizations who have there's a group that gets together that decides what they want to give to the governor to make into law. We are not a part of that. The liquor industry was not involved in that. We're not even consulted about what goes into this legislation. we're completely ignored, and yet it puts a penalty on our industry and on our people. That's just not right either. It's through national statistics, it's been shown that underage drinkers get most of their alcohol from their parents, knowledgeable or unknowledgeably, through their liquor cabinets. We put guns in lock cabinets. We should be putting our liquor in lock cabinets as well. So 65% of it comes from the parents. The second most prevalent area where liquor gets to underage drinkers is from friends and relatives, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, somebody that's old enough to legally buy alcohol and provide it to the underage drinkers. Thirdly is what we call the shoulder taps, where there's these underage drinkers are around liquor stores, and they'll go up and tap somebody on the shoulder and try to get them to sell alcohol to them or go back in and get more alcohol. It's also found out by the state troopers on some of their compliance checks, their stings, that a lot of these people that sell to these underage people are sexual predators and repeat offenders and so forth. They're real bad people. So anyway, there's another venue where the underage people get alcohol, and that is the after-hours clubs. If you just read the paper in Anchorage here in the last couple of weeks, from a tip from Anchorage Char, the APD and ABC board busted two after-hours joints where there were underage drinkers there. I mean, these are unlicensed. These are illegal operations, but they sell to the minors not only alcohol but cigarettes and drugs and who knows what else. But that onus comes down on the legitimate licensees of the state, and that's also wrong. So just to reiterate, we're against this. We should not be penalized for something that somebody else does. Thank you,
Mr. Buehr, and we have a question for you from Senator Elton.
I'll begin by saying there are people in Juneau who miss you even after 28 years. Welcome back to the community. And you mentioned the longevity that you have, your service, your bartenders. I mean, and as an owner, I mean, I guess one of the questions I have is, are we creating a situation in which a bartender makes one mistake, may lose the job because the owner may not want to take the risk of a $1,000 penalty?
That could very easily happen. The compliance checks already that are in place by the Department of Public Safety are very strict already, and this is just an additional thing. This goes on to the owner. So, that could happen very easily.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, and thank you for the Anchorage Char giving the tip to the police. I certainly appreciate the industry trying to help the police itself and get the bad actors out. Could you give me an idea that when it comes time for your permit to be evaluated by the local government and the ABC board, if in fact there have been a number of compliance checks and they find a bar that's got a bad history, how does that come into play at that time as far as evaluation of your license?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, APD keeps track of and they're going there. We've just found out they're going to get a more involved database, but they keep track of all the citations and all the visits to different bars for various reasons. It's not a very good system that we've had in the past, because if somebody, for instance, goes to get stopped in front of the Fifth Avenue Mall. There's a liquor licensee inside that mall, and they get finger put on him for being the fault, but it's not really them. So it's a weak system we have right now. But the assembly, all of our liquor licenses are go before the Anchorage Assembly for approval, and the ABC board is all part of that system as well.
Mr. Chairman, I just can't remember. Do you run the risk of losing your license if your operation proves to be a problem?
Yes. The assembly gives a recommendation to the ABC board, and the ABC board has the final to say on that.
Thank you.
I don't see any further questions. Thanks, Mr. Buehr, for making the trip down and taking the time to testify. Appreciate it.
May I remind the senators here that Anchorage or statewide Char has a appreciation dinner tomorrow night, Tuesday night at the Baranoff. That I'm sure you already have your invitation, but just want to make sure you have that in person.
Appreciate that, and Gavel to Gavel will broadcast for you free of charge statewide. Next up, we have Diane Castro, who is here to testify. I also have a note that just to let the committee know that Commissioner Masters has been on the line and has been listening in. Commissioner, welcome. I just learned that you were listening in. Do you want to chime in while you've got a moment? He was here, and now he's gone. And we also have John Glick. Just to remind everybody, we have John Glick, who's here in case from the troopers, in case there's questions for him about some of the village aspects of this bill. But welcome. While we've got you, let's go ahead.
Thank you. Diane Casto. I am the manager for prevention and early intervention services with the Division of Behavioral Health within the Department of Health and Social Services.
Ms. Castro, so, excuse me for putting an R in your name.
You are not the first one to do that.
I'm sorry. I am sorry.
It happens daily. So.
Please go ahead.
That's okay. I would like to testify in support of SB 85 for the Department of Health and Social Services. You know, I've listened to a lot of the testimony today. I've listened to the testimony from the previous committee. And, you know, I think there's some truth to everything that's been said. Alcohol is a huge problem for the state of Alaska. Recently, in the last couple of years, the department, through a contract that we received with the federal government, were able to put together a state epidemiological profile on substance use, abuse, and dependency within Alaska. And what we found, not to our surprise, but what we suspected we would find, is that the number one drug of choice in Alaska is alcohol. That we drink an enormous amount of alcohol, and it causes an enormous amount of problems. Is Senate Bill 85 going to solve all those problems? Absolutely not. That's the reality. But what we do know is that with problems like substance use, with alcohol abuse, that it is a multi-strategy approach, that you can't just tackle one issue and expect to solve all of the problems. In the last committee, you will remember that someone testified that if this bill passed, that people would be drinking more Listerine and some other substance that I can't remember now. And I thought, you know, if that's the case, then the other bill that we need is to increase the treatment programs that we have for substance use, because that's someone who's clearly beyond just a casual user of alcohol. So it's a big issue, it's a big problem, and it needs to be looked at from a very comprehensive approach. One strategy is not going to solve this problem. But just a couple of things that I want to talk about, and they've been alluded to, is that alcohol does indeed cause a lot of problems for the state of Alaska. First of all, we do know that Alaskans consume approximately 2.66 gallons of alcoholic beverages per 10,000 population. That's from the ages of 14 and beyond. That is a lot of alcohol, and I know that I personally don't consume my 2.66 gallons. So someone else is getting that. During 2001 to 2004, the leading cause of premature death in Alaska included chronic liver disease, cirrhosis, homicide, suicide, and unintentional injury, and majority of those were associated with alcohol use.
Could you say that statistic again? Did you say the leading cause of death?
The leading cause of premature death.
Premature death.
So death not related to aging and things, but unexpected, dying before your
time, so to speak. But that was a fairly lengthy list. Would you read the list again?
Chronic liver disease, cirrhosis, homicide, suicide, and unintentional injury. And these are statistics from the Division of Public Health in their violent death and unintentional death reporting system.
Thank you.
We also know that we consume alcohol at a greater rate than the national averages for all alcoholic beverages, but for spirits or hard liquor, we are 1.5 times higher than the national average in our use. In the annual household survey that's conducted by the federal government that they conduct for all the states, it was indicated that 50% of adults in Alaska report current alcohol use. The prevalence of binge drinking in Alaska remains at the national, we are the highest for the nation, and particularly for ages of 18 to 34. So binge drinking, and I'll talk about what a binge drink is as well. Approximately 16% of all hospitalized injuries have been associated with alcohol use. 32% of motor vehicle crashes involved alcohol, although that is a declining number, so that's good. And 31% of fatal motor vehicle crashes involved alcohol. So that's just a little sample, and I can certainly get you more detail of those statistics if you would like those. What does, you know, we talk a lot about what is a drink, what is moderate drinking, what is, you know, heavy drinking, binge drinking. So a standard drink in the United States is 12 ounces of beer, you know, a bottle of beer, 8 ounces of malt liquor, 5 ounces of wine, 1.5 ounces or a shot of 80 proof alcohol. Moderate drinking, as defined by the dietary guidelines for Americans, is having no more than one drink per day for women and no more than two drinks per day for men. Heavy drinking goes up to two drinks, an average of more than two drinks per day for women or men, and binge drinking is an average of four or more for women and five or more for men on a single occasion, which would be considered binge drinking. So just to kind of put that in perspective as well. So again, what we know is alcohol causes a lot of problems. We talk about youth drinking as well, which is an area that we work a lot with, and underage drinking, and that clearly is causing a lot of problems as well. In 73.6% of students reported having had at least one drink of alcohol on one or more days during their lifetime. This was from the WIRE, 2007 YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. 73.6% of students, grades 9 through 12, reported having had at least one drink of alcohol on one or more days during their life. 20.4% of those students reported having had their first drink of alcohol before the age of 13, which we know by statistics and research indicates and shows that if you start drinking before the age of 15, you are much more likely to have a lifelong problem with alcohol. So over 20% of our young people are starting before the age of 13. And 39.7% of students reported having had at least one drink of alcohol, one or more in the past 30 days. So we have a lot of drinking among our young people. The good news is most of our alcohol consumption among young people is going down, little bit by bit, but it is starting to go down. So overall, I think what the message is from the department is that we do support a multi-strategy approach. We see SB 85 as one piece of that puzzle, one piece of that strategy. In regards to Section 2, which is, let me grab my piece of paper, which is the piece on
the licensees.
What I would like to say about that is, again, I can't remember, someone just testified, one of the folks testified that only a small percentage of alcohol is purchased by youth in a retail store or in a bar. He's absolutely right. But again, we see this as a multi-strategy approach. We need to be looking at how youth are getting their alcohol in many ways, and certainly retailers are a piece of that picture. And what we believe is that there should be similar laws to the tobacco laws that we currently have that have a fine for both the clerk who sells tobacco to a minor, that, and in Alaska that's under 19 years of age, and it also has a penalty for the licensee, which I think reinforces that this is a serious issue and that we all need to be paying attention to it. There is due process for, I know I've heard that a couple of times, and I certainly won't, I mean, Annie can discuss it better, but this has been a huge issue in the tobacco compliance check area. We have revised laws. There are hearings for everyone, so there is due process. I make an assumption that would be the case here as well. And what we have found in tobacco is that we went from a 40% sell rate down to this year, I think it was about 12% sell rate by having very strict laws and penalties for those people who sell tobacco to minors. I do not think that anyone intentionally sells tobacco or alcohol to minors, but I think we have to have a very strong statement and strong penalties to reinforce that we are taking this serious and that we want to keep these dangerous substances out of the hands of our youth. Thank you.
Ms. Castro, thank you. This may be a question directed at somebody else besides you, but you're here, and so I'll ask whether you know who statewide tracks incidents of underage sales inside bars to minors. Is there some number I can look at last year that says, oh, Lord, there were 50 of these last year, or there were 100, or there were 9? I just don't know.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is. You mean in terms of stings? Or
no. I mean how many citations were issued, or how many criminal convictions were issued against licensees for having served a minor last year in the state of Alaska?
And I think I know tobacco, but I don't know alcohol quite as well. It probably is the ABC board, would be my guess.
Okay, well, that's just something I'll follow up on for the next hearing.
And I can tell you that through the Division of Juvenile Justice, and they have the federal enforcing underage drinking laws funding, and they monitor all of the compliance checks that are occurring. And just, again, to keep things in perspective, we have one person who does compliance checks for the state. And alcohol. We have three that do tobacco compliance checks. So it's a very small percentage of sales that we actually monitor.
Fair observation. Senator Terrio.
With the tobacco sales, we don't have a mechanism, I don't believe, that's similar to the alcohol, where the licensee comes back up for, you know, comments or recommendation by the local government that could potentially jeopardize the continuation of that license.
Through the chair, actually, it's tougher for the tobacco industry in that in order to sell tobacco, you have to have a tobacco endorsement. And currently, the law, and I used to know this inside and out, but I haven't had to testify on it in a while, so I may be a little rusty. But currently, on a first offense, there is a fine to the clerk, and this is for tobacco. There is a fine for the owner, and there is a suspension of their tobacco endorsement. So they lose for 20 days their ability to sell tobacco with a first offense for tobacco sales to minors. So it's very, it's a very robust law. They get that back within 20 days, and then on a third offense, like it goes to 30 days and then 40 days, and then it, so the more offenses you have, the longer you lose your ability to sell tobacco, which for some businesses is a significant loss of revenue. So it's certainly in their best interest not to sell.
Thank you.
I don't see any further questions. Thanks for being here this afternoon. I appreciate it. Last up to testify is Lieutenant Rodney Dial, who is here in the audience and has been listening patiently. And Lieutenant, welcome to the committee. Please come forward. Put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the Department of Public Safety, and I just wanted to make a few brief comments. The department supports Senate Bill 85, and just for the record, I've lived in Bethel myself. I went to school there. That was one of my first jobs. We strongly feel that this bill will not hinder the average Alaskan importing alcohol into their local option community for their own legal use. However, we do believe that this bill will impact the illegal distribution of alcohol into restricted communities. And from a law enforcement standpoint, we see that reducing violent crime. We know that this is getting into the hands of people that can't handle alcohol, who are distributing that alcohol to other people that shouldn't have the alcohol. It's causing us a lot of problems out there. One of the things, and I was going through Title IV while I was sitting back there in the audience, and I just wanted to comment, and I know that Department of Law has already talked about this, but this amount of alcoholic beverages, it's not a finding of guilt. It's just simply a presumption that the person possessed the alcohol beverages for sale. And all of those cases are certainly looked at by the district attorney's office and law enforcement in those communities for, you know, what was the intent? Why was that alcohol being brought out? And we'd just like to strongly support this bill, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
I've got a couple questions, and I think Senator Terrio does as well. I agree that it doesn't set a personal limit for possession, except that I think when you look at page 2, the lines 8, 9, and 10, you know, by restricting the amount that can be shipped to an individual, you've in essence put a de facto limit on them. That is, it may be that they are somehow able to get a hold of 10 cases of beer, and that they have a perfectly legitimate explanation for that, and it's you decide not to charge that person with bootlegging because, you know, it looks, you know, in all the circumstances to be a reasonable amount for the beer for that situation. The fact is that they will have a hard time assembling that unless they're sort of caging together four or five people that don't drink into helping them ship, which doesn't strike me as being a very good policy. So yes and no, I guess, is my response to that one point. Maybe more specifically, though, you can help me with this, and that is, it seems to me this bill is designed to help you make cases where you're in the gray area, you know, where you've got 12 liters of hard liquor. And, you know, maybe under the old standard, you'd go, it's just too close to the line, I'm not going to bother. But if we lower those some, you know, then we can go ahead and prosecute where before you might decline it or the DA might decline it. And I guess I'm curious as to, in your experience, how many cases are like that, or how many cases are guys that just have a boatload? I mean, literally like a skiff full of alcohol, and there's no question about it. How many of them are really going to fall in this what I would call gray zone?
Mr. Chairman, I think we would see both. We certainly right now see those cases where they're extremely over the limit. It's a no-brainer. But then there's also those cases where they're just right under that legal limit. They have all of the same type of alcohol. It's all the same brand. It's packaged in a manner that's kind of to hide it from view. I mean, those are cases like you mentioned that this bill would allow us to address. We know, or we suspect we know what the intent is and where that alcohol is going to wind up, and that it's not going to be for good use. I mean, so that's where we see the benefit, because a lot of people do know what the limits are out there, and they can work around these, and it is an incredible amount of alcohol is what we feel, sir.
And you, in your professional capacity, have worked these cases?
Yes, sir, I have. And, in fact, I supervise patrol functions in Southeast Alaska, and we, Angoon is a local option community, so we're working in the community of Angoon to restrict alcohol out there.
Thank you. Senator Terrio.
Yes, can you tell me the issue that was brought up and Senator French mentioned at the beginning of the hearing, that, you know, it's not the person that's got a wine cellar that obviously has, you know, collected up bottles of wine, and for how do you handle issues where a person may be heading into the Christmas season, the holiday season, has gathered up at their residence over time an amount that exceeds this? How easy would it be for them to exercise the rebuttable presumption then to say, well, you know, we're going to host a big Christmas party, or we do every year, and so we need to have more on the premises, or is that a question better suited for Ms. Carpinetti?
Through the chair, sir, what we would do is, part of any good investigation is obviously going to be talking to the person and trying to find out what their intent was. I would suspect, based on my own experience, that we're not going to see a situation where somebody is bringing in excess of the legal amount, all of the same type of alcohol, in a manner that would, you know, try to hide it from view, per se. If we felt that there was other that if there were mitigating factors to the case, we would just refer it to the district attorney's office for review and not necessarily make an arrest that day. I mean, we try to exercise some discretion, and I know that the district attorney's office does the same. So I can never remember it in my 19 years as a state trooper, a case where we have charged somebody who has a wine cellar and was bringing in wine to stock a wine cellar, for example. Or, and I can't even remember a case where somebody told me that it was for a holiday party or holiday event. I mean, it's usually it's a very clear over the limit amount, or it's brought in a manner that's to hide it and to try to bring it in a manner like that.
Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this isn't necessarily a question for the lieutenant, but I assume that we're going to have a future discussion on this. And I have a 3 o'clock, but I as one of the non-attorneys on the Judiciary Committee, it would be helpful to me if at some point in the future somebody could either approach the committee or stop by my office. I'm struggling with the issue, and I'm sure it has already been addressed someplace. Struggling with the issue that what we're doing is we're retroactively applying new standards under a local option law. And I need to understand, I guess I need to understand kind of the legal theory behind why they don't apply to me because I live in an urban center, but they do apply to somebody else that lives in a damp community. And as part of that, I think we probably need, or I need an answer to the question, I mean, what does happen if we retroactively apply new standards, a new recipe on the amount of liquor that can be sold? I mean, are we really jeopardizing going, you know, having some communities go back to wet from damp, because that has policy implications also? And so those, an answer to those two questions, I'm sure there's a legal answer that says, yes, you can apply a different standard to me than you can to somebody in Bethel. I just need to know what it is.
I mean, I'll hazard a guess. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, more in the future. And that is, you know, they've voted themselves damp at some point, and they voted themselves damp under a certain sort of level of allowable alcohol, for lack of a better term. And I think we're allowed to change those limits for the future, not for the past. But I agree. There's at least a little bit of an issue about whether those voters are now getting what they thought they got when they voted in the first place for that damp designation. And we're hearing that from the citizens. It is about time to wrap up, but let me close with a couple of questions for future information from the department. I'd be interested in knowing how many cases of bootlegging were referred for prosecution last year, and how many were completed. That is, how many were convicted, how many were not. And so that's one question. The other question relates to the ABC board. How many bars last year were cited for selling to underage minors? You know, was it 1, 10, or 50? And there's that. And then finally, there's a policy question that I'll toss to Ms. Carpinetti. It's like the essay question, right? There's two multiple choice in the essay. And the essay is, and we discussed this in the last hearing, because we heard from Barrow, a community that has, by their own vote, lowered their alcohol limits there from what the state allows to a tighter level. And the policy question that raises is why not let Bethel do that same process? Why not let Bethel set what they feel are the right limits for the rebuttable presumption is and what the shipment levels are if that's their choice. So those are the three questions from me. And if there's nothing else to come before the committee here a few minutes after 3 o'clock, we will be adjourned. Mm-hmm.